Welcome to the Andy Staples Show special realignment rumor edition. No, we're not going to spend a lot of time on realignment. We've got Chris Vanini here. We're going to talk, well, several topics, because Chris has written a lot lately about a lot of very interesting things, including fat guy touchdowns. So we have to have a serious talk about fat guy touchdowns. We got to talk about Mike Oresko doing something that a year ago, if you'd said the commissioner of the American Athletic Conference is going to have to deny plotting with ESPN to destroy the Big 12, I would have said that sounds ludicrous, but that's where he is right now. And we're also going to talk about AAC member Cincinnati entering a season when, I don't know, if things broke right, maybe they actually could be a playoff contender. There's a lot going on. And we, you know, be remiss if we didn't talk about the Chris Berman nickname story that Chris Vanini wrote, because Eric sleeping with Bieniemy is an all-timer. I don't care how you feel about Chris Berman. That's incredible. So, Chris, welcome. You've been incredibly busy.
Yes, I mean, I think we all have. It's been one heck of a summer. Fall camp is here, and honestly, I'm not even in the football mind yet. I'm writing conference previews and trying to remember what actual football looks like. And we're still a few weeks away, and who knows what's going to happen in the coming weeks, but it's been good.
And so let's, before we start with all the stuff you've been doing, there was a rumor. We don't even have to say who said it, because it was completely ridiculous.
I wouldn't even call it
a rumor.
But it
was pretty funny. Well, when you start it with, I tell you who told me, but I'd have to shoot you. And then proceed to basically say anybody who hasn't been invited to the SEC yet has been and is now joining. So let me make sure I got it right. Which school is it? The TCU, Baylor, Texas Tech, and Oklahoma State to quote unquote lock up the Texas market.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when you're doing realignment, when you're expanding your conference, you have to do it like The Bachelor. You have to give out one or
lots
two spots at a time. You can't bring everybody at once. You gotta let them sweat a little bit. I think that's what the SEC is probably doing here.
Well, I mean, when you have two lesser lights in the Lone Star State, like Texas A&M and Texas, you really do need to beef up your presence there.
Yes. You know, I'd love to know. I mean, I'm sure nobody did, but I want to know who told him and if he would follow through. Like if I said, hey, you can shoot me if you tell me, like, would he go through with that?
I don't know. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, somebody on Twitter said this. You can go find it if you want to.
Not true.
It's pretty funny. If I was making up a BS realignment rumor, I mean, that's shooting for the moon, I guess. But I mean, wouldn't you at least throw like Arsenal in there or the Los Angeles Rams?
I need the, you know, this summer has really lacked the dude of West Virginia, the Twitter famous realignment.
Doesn't he have
guru.
His tweets protected?
They are protected. He follows me on Twitter and I went to go look, couple weeks back, and yeah, they're protected. We can't see what the dude is saying. Maybe they're behind a paywall somewhere. Maybe people are paying for those kinds of scoops.
I will not begrudge anybody putting their stories behind a paywall trying to earn a living. So
for sure,
that's fine with me. But I do love that the realignment specialists, the people like the Twitter feeds that roared back to life the moment realignment started, and it's like, wait, where have you been? Are you somebody else the rest of the time? And then when realignment hits, you are suddenly this person?
Yeah, it's good. You got to have a niche. I mean, people are going to come to you for one thing. So when it's your moment, you got to have the goods.
But see, realignment's a really weird niche to have. Like Lunardi, I understand. The NCAA tournament is once a year. Lunardi has his time to shine. Mel Kiper, the NFL draft is once a year. He has his time to shine. We don't know when realignment's going to hit. It could be 10 years before the next round. Now, obviously, something's going to happen with the rest of the Big 12. But, you know, this lies dormant for a while. It's like a volcano. It lies dormant for a while.
Yeah, that's why you have to stay on top of it, even when nobody's talking about it. That's what the best reporters do. So they're ready for when the moment comes. And I think, I don't remember what this guy's name was, but him and the dude... clearly, I think that's what they've been doing.
Well, I for one am excited for this was very specific, this report, by the way. It was going to be two divisions, two 10-team divisions. Do you know what we call a 10-team division, Chris?
A conference.
That's right. We call it a conference. So yes. I'm guessing it's probably that's probably not how things actually work. And when you're crafting your BS realignment rumor, you should probably try to have some element of reality in it.
Hey, look, when we get proven wrong and he gets proven right, we will forward this to Old Takes Exposed. You don't need to do it for us.
The whole episode. I will deliver.
Yeah. When the SEC decides, hey, you know, we liked Oklahoma and Texas, but we realized what we really needed was more Big 12, then I guess we'll be wrong.
That's right. We would be wrong, and I will apologize in person. I will fly and meet this gentleman and say, I'm sorry. Please don't shoot me. Well, you don't have to tell me who told you.
But well, as long as he doesn't have to tell you, then he won't have to.
Okay. Well, then we're good. We're good. But and this is just how all of this is going. And the level of believability of everything gets ratcheted up because, like we were talking about earlier, you know, you just wrote this story on Mike Oresko, and this is a legit story. This really happened. The commissioner of the Big 12 really did send a cease and desist letter to an executive at ESPN saying, stop plotting with some other league to ruin us. And clearly he was talking about the American. And so you talked to Mike Oresko about this. And so what is his response to all of this? Because he was on vacation in Idaho when all this happened, right?
Yeah, he has a place in Idaho that he likes to go to. He might be there right now, actually. I'm not sure. First of all, for folks who aren't aware with the geography of the city of Dallas, the American Athletic Conference just moved into its new office like last year, but they didn't really move in it because COVID. The Big 12 is less than a mile away, right across the highway. You can basically see them from each other. So Bowlesby sends this letter to ESPN. It's really about ESPN. It's not about the American, but Mike Oresko talks about it at their media day last week, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and says, no, we have not plotted with ESPN to take the other Big 12 schools. Now, the American absolutely would love to add Big 12 schools. And
oh yeah,
and Mike wouldn't talk about any conversations they've had with schools. But so it's natural that the American would want to do that. The idea that ESPN was plotting with them is not something that he would admit to doing.
Yeah, well, and he said something like, well, everybody asks about the lay of the land. And that's the thing. You don't have to be plotting, but you can kind of figure out where your league stands, and you kind of know based on your own contract. But you can figure out what everybody else is worth. You can ask around and figure out what everybody else is worth, and then figure out, because if you read the tea leaves and you have some idea that Texas and Oklahoma are going to leave, or you find out Texas and Oklahoma are going to leave, you need, if you're Mike Oresko, to know a couple of things. You need to know, what are mine worth? Because are they about to get poached? And what are they worth? Because can I play defense by playing offense?
Right.
And, you know, it's, I don't think we're going to get an answer to what direction that's going to go in for a few years, Chris, unless something crazy happens. Because if I'm the rest of the schools in the Big 12, I want to squeeze every penny out of Texas and Oklahoma that I can.
Right. Right. There's no, unless one of the other Big 12 schools gets an offer from another Power 5 league, which doesn't appear likely, especially not imminent, it's in their best interest to stay together, both for playoff purposes, for playoff money purposes, for autonomy purposes, to get for TV purposes, and to get all that buyout money out of Texas and Oklahoma. It behooves them to stay together. And if they're staying together, then you have to think about, if you're the Big 12, is there anybody we can add? And where are you going to first look? You're going to look probably at the American. And so if you're the American, you have the most to gain here, but also maybe the most to lose. And like you said, you play a bit of defense by playing offense. And Mike Oresko told his teams, he told his ADs that he thinks that there's a chance they could get some Big 12 schools, that they could convince some to come over. Number of people are skeptical about it, but it's really not up to them. It's really up to the Big 12 schools.
Well, and that's exactly right. They I think will still have leverage and more power than the American schools. But the Americans been trying to promote this idea of the Power Six, and they're the sixth power conference. You take Texas and Oklahoma out of the Big 12, and they might be the fifth most powerful conference. I think it still depends on how good each team is kind of year to year. But yeah, you look at the top of the Big 12, which right now, or the top of the Big 12 minus Oklahoma and Texas, which right now you're talking about Iowa State, you're talking about Oklahoma State, TCU, if they get back into the groove that they were in before. And then the American, Cincinnati, UCF, Tulsa's been very good the last couple of years. Houston could be pretty good. SMU's been pretty good. I think they're both pretty good leagues, and but when you look at them, they seem pretty even.
They are. And really, what any potential move will come down to is television money. I mean, Bob Bowlesby said at that Texas Senate hearing that losing Texas and Oklahoma would cut their TV revenue in half from $28 million. So if you're still getting $14 million a year in the Big 12, that's double what you're getting in the American right now. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing. Every Group of Five team right now, if they got an offer to join the Big 12, they are taking that offer. From all the way west to San Diego State, all the way up to Temple in the Northeast, like everybody's going to take that because there's going to be more money. There's going to be more potential college football playoff spot there and payout autonomy. So none of the teams are going to say that publicly. They can't. They're going to say we like our conference. We're always looking for the best thing, but they'll all take a Big 12 offer if it comes.
We'll be right back after these words. Of all these teams we're talking about, the one that is getting the most hype on the field this season is Cincinnati. They're coming in after they go undefeated during the regular season last year. They lose to Georgia in the Peach Bowl in a very good game. They bring back almost everyone. Luke Fickell obviously has been targeted by various coaching searches, but continues to stay at Cincinnati and really seems to enjoy it there. And I'm curious about this because, you know, Chris, there's really only been one team I felt like in the Group of Five that ever had a real chance to make the playoff. And it did the hard part and didn't do the easier part. It did the hard part by beating two very good Power Five teams that happened to be very good that season, which is the part that no Group of Five team can control. But it's that 2016 Houston team that beat Oklahoma, that would go on to win to the Big 12 title, and beat Louisville with Lamar Jackson, but then lost two games in American Conference play.
Right, that Louisville win, I think, was later in the year.
Lost some games at that point.
I think Houston got up to number five, I think, a couple weeks after the Oklahoma, five or six after the Oklahoma game. And this was after having won the Peach Bowl the year before over Florida
State.
Correct,
against Florida State, yep.
Yeah, so they get up to five or six, but then they lose to, I don't remember if it was SMU or Navy.
They lost to Navy first. And SMU. Navy, the SMU loss was especially shocking.
Yeah, I don't remember which one was first, but it was one of those. And that's the point that Bill Hancock always makes when people say a Group of Five team can't make it. He says Houston almost did. Houston could have. That's what it is. And that's what Cincinnati faces. They are number eight preseason by
and
far.
And they have Notre Dame and Indiana in the non-conference.
Starting at eight, that's by far the highest a Group of Five team has ever been in the preseason. That Houston team started at 15, I think, and they got up to five. Mm-hmm. So Cincinnati is already starting at eight. They've got two current top 20 opponents in the non-conference with Notre Dame and Indiana.
But they need Notre Dame and Indiana to be good. And that's the part. And this is what every Group of Five team will lament is Alabama doesn't have to worry about how the rest of its schedule fares. Because let's be honest, they know that some of LSU, Florida, Auburn of that group is going to be really good. So if they can get through it, they're fine. But with the Group of Five, you do have to kind of rely on how good your Power Five non-conference opponents are. These two, the last few years, have been very good. So if they're as good as they've been the last few years, then I think that's good for Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati has to beat them, and then they still have to be good. So
both on the road, too.
Yeah. And if they can, look, getting through the American is no cakewalk either. You got Gus Malzahn at UCF now. Like we mentioned, Tulsa's been good. Dana Holgorsen hasn't had a real good year at Houston yet, but it's been, you know, they had the one of the weirder COVID situations that you'll have to deal with. And I just, you know, I think it's going to be really hard to go undefeated in the American, no matter how good Cincinnati is.
It is. And well, one thing about Cincinnati, though, starting at number eight, if they beat Notre Dame and Indiana, it'll still be early enough in the season that Cincinnati will probably be top five at that point. They could be real close to top five. They don't have to climb up as far. And if they get to number five-ish and win the rest of their games, they will be in the conversation. Obviously, if the bottom falls out of Indiana and Notre Dame, things could change. But that's the benefit of starting where they're starting, is that there is more room to give. But as for that conference schedule, they get UCF at home. They get Tulsa at home. They get SMU at home. They don't play Houston. They don't play Memphis. That's pretty good if you're Cincinnati. Yep. It can't
good
be set
they
up.
Would see them.
Sure. Because the American only has 11 teams, it's going to be top two play each other in a conference championship game. There may be a rematch in there. It may be a Houston or a Memphis. So there's not another division to go with. But it sets up pretty good between the number of people that they have back, between those Notre Dame and Indiana games, and between the conference schedule and all those games at home. This is as good a chance as a team maybe will ever have to make the college football playoff, a group of five team.
Now, what's interesting is the hardest part of their schedule pretty much ends October 23rd at Navy. You know, if let's say they're undefeated, then they will have beaten Miami of Ohio, Murray State, Indiana, Notre Dame. And Indiana and Notre Dame are both road games, as you mentioned. Now, they are not consecutive weeks. There's a bye week in between.
Right.
So, but then they play Temple, they play UCF, and then they're at Navy. The UCF and at Navy combo is going to be harder than people think, too. But, yeah, if you're done with that, afterward, you've got Tulane, Tulsa, USF, SMU, East Carolina. Tulsa's the scariest one of that bunch, but you can manage that. And then you may just be sitting there watching everybody else pound on each other and clinging for dear life when the playoff rankings come out.
Well, the SMU game is one to watch. I mean, SMU's got a lot of talent. They just need to figure out the quarterback situation. But if they do, they're going to be... They could be top three in the league.
So this is going to be a very interesting year, because I do think we're going to have that conversation. Now, I don't know. We're pretty sure Cincinnati can beat Indiana and Notre Dame. I'm not saying they're gonna beat both of them, but they are certainly talented enough. You know, Desmond Ridder is a really good quarterback. Sauce Gardner is the kind of guy that he's a cornerback. He would start for probably every team in America. There's a lot of talent on this roster, and it just amazes me the job that Lou Fickell has done, because you know Cincinnati was one of those programs that was good for a long, long time, but Tommy Tuberville did not leave much.
No, it was a disastrous run there, and do not bring up his name to the fans there, because that came after a run of Mark D'Antonio, Brian Kelly, Butch Jones, all winning big, and then completely fell out under Tommy Tuberville. And Luke Fickell has recruited at essentially a Big Ten level. He's added multiple four-star guys to this roster in the last couple of years. And you couple that with just the great coaching they have. This one thing about Notre Dame game is that Marcus Freeman, the former former Cincinnati defense coordinator, is now at Notre Dame. So that'll be a meeting of friendly faces there too.
I've talked about this with Ari as it relates to Kentucky, but I'm curious, because you're a Michigan State grad, you still follow that league very closely. How much have Mark Stoops and Luke Fickell affected the recruiting in the middle of the Big Ten, like the mid-level Big Ten teams?
It's been huge. I mean, you get those Ohio kids that Mark D'Antonio made a living off of, and you saw the bottom fall out on D'Antonio there, because they just didn't have the same level of player. You know, Ohio State under Urban Meyer recruiting nationally, Michigan recruiting nationally, it left a lot of talented kids in Ohio available that Michigan State was feeding on. And then Kentucky comes in and is taking them. And Cincinnati's doing the same thing. I mean, the year Luke Fickell turned down Michigan State and stayed at Cincinnati, and I think maybe even this past cycle, Cincinnati's recruiting better than Michigan State is. Wow. He turned that job down. He's now making $3 million, and he's got a path to the college football playoff, and he's recruiting, getting that talent level up where this is a Big Ten quality team.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that makes you handle the dips in the schedule better, handle the having to play Navy, you know, right after you play a really good USF or UCF team. That makes you capable of withstanding that. It's the same thing Alabama does in the SEC at a higher level, where you're just deeper than everybody else.
Yeah, and especially in the trenches where Cincinnati's got, honestly, some All-American quality linemen in there. Like, that is a team that can live in the trenches. You saw it against Georgia, where Cincinnati probably should have won that game. They blew it at the end, but they held up against a very talented Georgia team. And that's,
if they don't lose their left tackle, I think they probably.
Yeah, well, that's exactly, you saw that. Once they lost that guy, then it was an open door on that side and it became difficult. But when they have those starters there, the depth will get you through the American. The depth won't get you through the SEC. But the guys who are starting are quality guys.
In the American, the other team that really intrigues me is UCF, going from Josh Heupel, who went to Tennessee, to hiring Gus Malzahn from Auburn. You've talked to Gus since he got there. I've watched pretty much every press conference he's done, and it's weird. It's weird. It's like vacation Gus. Like, he's yes. The happiest person on earth right now. And I knew that he was under a lot of different pressures at Auburn.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how different he sounds when you take that kind of pressure away.
Yeah, and I mean, he was even asked, I think, in the press conference, like, the pressure of like an undefeated season at UCF and kind of what they have. But man, that's nothing compared to the pressure they have at a place like Auburn. And that's a reason he's $25 million richer before even right. taking this job. But he says he was not going to coach this year. He was going to maybe do some media or something, but then Tennessee shoots itself in the foot and hires Josh Heupel, and suddenly a job's open with an AD he has worked with in Terry Mahajer. They worked together at Arkansas State. And suddenly, the best, arguably the best group of five job in the country, better than a lot of Power Five jobs, is open. You got $25 million in your bank account. It's in Orlando. It's a nice place to go, and you can get a lot of kids there. And that's what he's doing. And he sounds like you said, he sounds like he's having a great time.
Yeah, it's wild how different it is. And Auburn is one of those jobs where there's a lot of people calling you always saying, hey, you know, you need to do this and you need to do that. He's not getting a single phone call like that at UCF. And that's big. No. But also that UCF team last year, obviously the offense was very good with Dylan Gabriel running the show, and he's back. Their defense wasn't very good, but they had a bunch of opt-outs before the season started. So now everybody's back. Plus, you get some transfers like Big Cat Bryant from Auburn, who was a good player at Auburn, but I don't think he was, in terms of draft stock, what he thought he should be, and decided he wanted to play another season, but he wanted to play it for Gus. So he's at UCF now.
Yeah, they've added 8 or 9 Power Five transfers at wide receiver, defensive tackle. Like they lost quite a bit. They lost their top 3 running backs. They lost some of their top receivers as well. And so Gus turned to the transfer portal, grabbed guy from Tennessee, grabbed Big Cat from Auburn, got a couple Auburn guys, got a former 5-star recruit from Notre Dame. And he's planning to use the transfer portal every year, like the way SMU has used it, which is there's a lot of Power Five guys who aren't getting the playing time they want, guys you maybe couldn't have gotten out of high school who will give you a second look now. And it's a whole new way to bring in some more talent. And so he has upgraded that talent level big time since he got there. And it's in the offense has those questions, but they have pieces. The defense has been falling apart in recent years. They had all the opt-outs last year, but they also had a couple of players kicked off the team late in the year, especially on the defensive side. That caused even more problems because that defense was a mess by the end, and we saw it in that blowout bowl loss to BYU.
Oh, yeah, it was brutal. But, yeah, I think the way they're doing this is a good idea. And the SMU model is the way to go when you're in – you're at a nice school in a big city,
yep.
A city that produces either produces a bunch of talent that goes elsewhere where you can get the bounce back guy coming home, or you maybe get a guy from Miami or Tampa who went out of state who wants to mm-hmm. come back to Florida and play. Because UCF has put enough guys in the draft lately that like an older guy making a business decision, UCF looks like a very smart business decision for that transfer.
Yep. And I mean, they've done that with some transfers already. I mean, Trey Nixon had come from, I think, Ole Miss. They had mm-hmm. they had grabbed some transfers here and there, but a place like UCF, a place like SMU, a place like Houston, where there's a lot of local and state talent, those are the guys you're looking at maybe a year or two since they left. Maybe they can come back to you and have 2-3 years left.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see Gus, because the biggest issue with Gus at Auburn, I think, was quarterback development. They never seemed to develop. Right. Right. And now he inherits Dylan Gabriel, who may be one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the country. And can he help him develop? Can he make him a very good draft prospect? And obviously, Gabriel does not have to leave after this season, but if he has a big year, he might want to.
That is the biggest question to me in this entire conference, is how does Dylan Gabriel fit in this offense? It's not that Gus always needs a running quarterback. You know, we saw Jared Stidham at Auburn, but all of those best years came
Chris,
with...
Where was Dylan Gabriel committed before UCF started recruiting him?
It was one of the service academies, right?
It was Army.
Yeah,
it was, he was going to be a running quarterback.
Mackenzie Milton, I think, was committed to Navy.
Yeah.
Well, he can be... But he also throws maybe the best deep ball in the country. And so that's why I'm just curious how this is going to fit, how this offense is. You don't want Dylan Gabriel just straight running the read option the whole time, I don't think.
Yeah, but you know what this makes me think of? What if Nick Marshall could really throw?
I don't know if Dylan Gabriel can move quite like that. He's not a converted, you know, what was it, receiver or defensive back or something like that.
Yeah, Nick was a corner.
Yeah.
But he moves well and moves well with the football, which there's a difference there. I like the guy, like Connor Shaw, when he was at South Carolina, was not a super plus athlete, but he was very smart with the football. He understood when there were yards to be gained on the ground and he'd go get them, and he didn't have anywhere near the arm that Dylan Gabriel has. So that's the thing. I think in Gus's offense, This could be a very good marriage. You know, we're watching De'Aaron King in that offense because Rhett Lashley's running it down at Miami. And I think, you know, De'Aaron's arm is not what Dylan's is.
Right.
But Dylan's a very good runner. And I'm excited about what that can be. But by the same token, I hear all the Auburn fans going, wait and see. Because the quarterbacks here didn't grow.
Right. Well, I mean, how many – Jeremy Johnson, think about all the guys that came at Auburn that were going to be the next big thing and just weren't. But Dylan Gabriel, he doesn't need to grow that much as a quarterback. He just needs to grow in the system. He knows – he's already an elite passer. He's already, like you said, one of the top quarterbacks in the country. It's just got to be a good fit here in terms of what they're running. So, yeah, Auburn never had a quarterback – you know, maybe Cam, but someone who could throw.
He was okay.
Yeah, that was. But there's an example: a guy who came in essentially 1 year. He was an older guy, and he fit, and it made it work. He did. He's a guy who didn't need to grow as a player. Yeah. I mean, he did, but
although
he needed to.
He had maybe the best natural skill set of anybody who ever lived. Yes. I mean, that helped.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah, there wasn't as much growing as a player there.
Yeah, I'm just excited to see what happens there, because I think that conference race is going to be a lot of fun. I think that Cincy UCF game in Cincinnati at Nippert is going to be wild. That's one of those. I still have not gotten to see a game at Nippert. I've been to Nippert a bunch of times, but not seen it. That place looks like it would be amazing.
I have not.
Night,
right.
Lights on.
I think I'm supposed to go because our Cincinnati writer Justin Williams told me, I think he's in a wedding that weekend. I have to check back with him, but I may be going up for that game, and I really hope I do, because I've not been there either for a game.
While we're on the subject of Justin Williams, our Cincinnati writer, we have to talk about his amazing story on Luke Fickell's wife. So Justin got, I guess she invited Justin to a bar class.
He asked her, what do you like, what do you like to do? And she said, the bar class, you should come. Yeah.
And then
they said, how about we bring Luke?
Yeah. Amy convinces Justin to invite Luke, and the scene is just incredible. Cause they're talking about, they're doing this burpee thing. And they're these extended burpees where you're supposed to do two pushups in time to pop back up. But the instructor says, some of you look like you could handle doing four pushups. And Luke goes, I think she's talking about me. And Amy comes over and goes, I think she's talking about me.
Yeah. And he paints this picture of Amy's killing this workout. And Luke, former college football player, former NFL player.
He played the NFL.
NFL player. He's having a tough time with this. So shout out to Amy Fickell, who clearly is owning her husband when it comes to these workouts here.
Also says raising six kids is easy because I guess she was the eighth of 10. So she said, if my mom could do that many, then six is no problem. But I can tell you right now from having two that six sounds like a lot.
Yeah, but between them and the Freemans, they had a whole huge family of kids that were always together.
I saw the photo. They sent out a photo with all of them together, and it was pretty crazy.
It's like a family reunion in my family.
Well, I feel like though that large family, that sort of the way they've got things set up there in Cincinnati, and obviously Luke Fickell's oldest son is now on the team at Cincinnati. He's a different kind of coaching job candidate when the carousel starts to spin. You know, you can say, oh, Luke Fickell has done well. He's ready to move into the Power Five, but I don't think he goes anywhere unless it's absolutely perfect because he's got a situation that works so great for him now.
And he's making $3 million a year. He's making mid to low Big Ten. He's making mid Big Ten money anyway.
Yeah.
You know, Mark D'Antonio would have loved for him to be the replacement, but Mark D'Antonio left in right before signing day. And he left with a cloud of NCAA investigation over the program. If he hadn't done that, if he had stepped down that December, Luke Fickell might be the coach of Michigan State right now. But that was a real tough situation to put him in that he didn't need to take. He, like for what you said, he has a great team, a great program. He's not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere. He didn't need to take that kind of risk. He's a guy who can take over a program that is already built to sustain.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, we often just look at those things in terms of, well, how good is the job? How prestigious is the job? What does it pay? But we need to look at it the way we'd look at a job that we were going to consider, where how does your spouse feel about it? Mm-hmm. Is it in a town you want to live in? That sort of thing. That's the more those things matter just as much to football coaches as they do to us.
Outside of, I think, a little bit of time in New Orleans, Luke Fickell spent basically his entire life in Ohio, from growing up, from playing, from coaching, like that's what he knows. That's what his family knows. You know, he's not the kind of guy you think will just pick up and go to Southern California on a whim to take a job.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. Before I let you go, I have to talk to you about, well, two things. We got to talk fat guy touchdowns. Because we're doing our 50 things we can't wait to see essays at The Athletic, a countdown to the football season. I've got one coming out on Saturday. I already had one about Ralphie, running with Ralphie. If you listened to the podcast last week, you heard Savannah Spakes, the Ralphie handler who gets to run with Ralphie. But you had a great one recently on the fat guy touchdown, which I played on the offensive line when I played. These are near and dear to my heart. No one ever even thought to give me the ball. And I just, you talked to, it was Brian O'Neill, right? The tackle from Pittsburgh.
Yeah. He's now with the Minnesota Vikings.
He's so athletic. It's ridiculous. Like, it's not even, it feels like it's not even a fat guy touchdown with him, even though he's a 310 pound tackle. But
right,
what he told you about hearing Nathan Peterman call the play in the huddle was just tremendous.
Yeah. So they're playing Georgia Tech. This is 2017, I think, 2016, one of those years. And Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator, comes up with this play and says, hey, if we get inside the 25-yard line, we're going to run this. And O'Neill didn't really believe him, just kind of thought whatever. And then they get to the game. They break off a big run, get inside the 25. get in the huddle and the play is called. And he says, I pretty much blacked out after that point. And what they did was they ran a throwback screen to him and he takes it right in for the touchdown for Pitt. And he wasn't done that year. He also took a kind of an end around handoff against Virginia Tech for a touchdown. And he threw two.
Yeah, I kind of wondered why they didn't give him the ball more.
Yeah, and well,
he was a dynamic play. Now that offense was really good that year.
Yeah,
but he was a dynamic playmaker.
He really was. And I mean, you talk about, you know, not exactly a fat guy. He's a converted tight end. And I asked him this. I said, hey, a lot of people call it fat guy touchdown. How do you feel about that? And he said, I don't think I'm there yet. I don't think I'm a fat guy. You know, we actually said big guy in the story because we didn't want to upset some folks who maybe don't want to be considered fat guy touchdown. But I talked to some other people. Some other guys were fine with it. But I know it's what we call it on Twitter. But the Vikings should look to get him involved in the offense more often, I think.
Listen, I saw them in the preseason last Saturday. They need all the help they can get. As yes. Kellen Mond would love to do some trick plays to him because it sounds like Kellen Mond's gonna have to play a lot more in the preseason. So, and then the other story of yours that just cracked me up was you wrote about the Chris Berman nicknames, which growing up, this was every Sunday night during the football season, you would get the NFL highlights with Chris Berman and Tom Jackson, and he's rattling off the nicknames. But also before that, and I didn't realize you were old enough to remember this, the Baseball Tonight Chris Berman nicknames. The baseball nicknames were the first ones, like Andy Dick Van Slyke and Chuck New Kids on Knobloch. But yes. then the football ones, Eric Sleeping with Bieniemy, Jake Daylight Coming, I Want to Dell Home. Like those were outstanding. You talked to Berman himself. You talked to some of the guys who had the nicknames. What were your favorites and who had the best kind of response to their own nickname?
Well, the one of my favorites, and the reason I did the story, I started it like 3 months ago, is because I saw something on TV that involved CC Sabathia. And he had the name CC Splish Splash, I Was Taking Sabathia. And I crack up every time I think of that. And I was like, you know what? We have this cultural vertical where we basically just get to write about a bunch of fun sports stuff and whatever we want. I pitch it to the editor. He said, yeah, go for it. Took a while to get everybody that I wanted to get. And the result was just a lot of people who had a whole lot of fun with the whole thing. Jake DeLome's been out of the league for 10 years. People still bring up that nickname to him when they say it. Eric Bieniemy, same thing. People still talk about that. He got married a long time ago, and he said his wife wasn't exactly a big fan of it by that time.
Oh, I'm sure she wasn't. But
the best one, and what I think is the best one, and Berman agreed, is back to baseball, Bert Beholm Blyleven.
Yes, that
the
is twin, a
the Twins
one.
Pitcher. And I talked to Bert. He loved it. He's both him and Berman told me they have a photo of the two of them looking at their watch, but they didn't have the photo on them. It's back in storage. They didn't know where it was, but I would love to see that image. That's considered by many to be the best one. The first one was Frank Tanana Daiquiri. I talked to Frank. He works at a church now outside Detroit. Or John Mayberry RFD. That one's a bit obscure. There was a TV show called Mayberry RFD on CBS in the 70s.
Proto Andy Griffith show, yeah.
Yeah. So it was one of those two were the first two, but Bert Beholm Blyleven is everybody's favorite.
Well, in that same era, he also had Oh to Be Young Again McDowell.
Yes.
Which was pretty tremendous.
That's a great one.
And look, I'm probably like everybody else who when they see Chris Berman now, it feels kind of sticky and old, but I'm telling you, when I was a kid, I cracked up every single time. Like every time. If I saw, you know, the city of, if I saw Three River Stadium, I knew I was getting an Andy Dick Van Slyke. And that made me happy.
Everybody had their favorites. Couple months ago when I first put it out there, I just said, hey, what's your favorite Berman nickname? Because I had seen the CC Sabathia thing and I got a bunch of them. There was Brian Totally Scroodland. There was a Rick Innocent Lysander. And just like, I'm a guy who loves puns. already. And Berman just went so over the top of it. He just hundreds of them. As I was talking to him, he just was like, hey, what are some of your favorites? He just started rattling them off. And I'm just laughing.
Andre Bad Moon Rising is another absolute
classic. That's probably, that honestly might be the most famous one. I mean, he got that tattooed on him, and that was a well-known nickname that probably a lot of people don't think came with him. There was, and then the others, Fred Crime Dog McGriff.
Absolutely.
I tried to get Fred. Yeah. I talked to some people who were close to him. They said he was essentially off the grid. Don't know what that means.
Should have called Tommy Mansky. You'd have called Tommy Mansky. You might have gotten.
Yeah, I could have done that too. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun.
Those videos were all filmed on the Little League field where I played.
Oh, really?
When I was a kid. Yeah.
Oh, yep. Wow. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
A few years before, but yes.
Oh, so, that's great.
Yeah, so those commercials were great. The Fred McGriff standing there with his bat on his shoulder. It was tremendous. Yeah, I love those. And that was a very nice trip down memory lane. I love when we kind of go a little off kilter at the Athletic. So I plan on doing a little more of that. A little more food writing here as the world hopefully begins to open back up and we can travel to some stuff. Haven't been able to yet, but it's going to happen. I can feel it. But I'm very excited for this football season, Chris. And this is the Cincinnati part of it that we talked about at the beginning of the show. I'm going to be locked in on Cincinnati, Indiana, and Cincinnati, Notre Dame, because I really do think if they get through that, we have a lot to talk about.
And there's a lot of people in the group of five that are going to be rooting for them that maybe not say it, but just the idea to break through. I mean, there's a belief that once the playoff moved to four, everybody just kind of pushed the group of five down a bit more, because Boise State, TCU, Utah, those were teams that could get into the top five pretty regularly for a period. But once top five meant you were in the playoff conversation, then people were a little bit less willing to do that. And Cincinnati's got a chance here starting at number eight. And with that schedule, that a lot of people hope they can break through and really provide a future opportunity for everybody else.
All right, I'm going to try a Chris Berman nickname here. That is Chris Vanini Press. It's okay. It's not bad, right?
It works.
It's up there.
What's the staple store motto? What is that? I don't even know.
Well,
they
had the easy button. Yeah. That's the problem.
How about Andy, the easy button staples or something like that. I don't know.
Everybody thinks that my last name is easy to come up with a nickname for or make fun of. And then you try to do it and nothing ever really works. It's very it's annoying.
I'm sure we could come up with something if we try to.
I like Vanini Press.
Andy Staples Gun.
That's true. Maybe it's. I'm telling you, it's way harder than you think, because I have a weird last name that is a common office supply and also a large office supply chain. So you'd think it'd be easy, but it's just not. So maybe we need to go to Berman with it. Berman will come up with something.
Yes, he will. I'll ask.
Anthony Booger McFarland. I'll text Anthony. I'll text Booger. Nobody ever calls him Anthony, not since Philip Fulmer tried to make him a center. But I'll text Booger and just say, hey, Boog, I need your help. Next time you see Berman, tell him that you got a friend named Andy Staples and he needs a nickname and you needed to go to the expert.
He could do it. He's got such a catalog of old songs, old movies, things. I think it was Jim. Two silhouettes on DeShays. That was a favorite among the older crowd. I had to look that one up, I'm not going to lie.
But Jim's Saturday Night LaFever was another one of my favorites. 80s era manager.
So, okay, there you go. It could have worked with Dan LaFever, the Central Michigan quarterback as well.
That's exactly right. Chris Vanini, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks for having me, Andy.